And Dr. Robert, ready to get started? We're ready.
Wonderful. Well, you had said that you wanted me to just let you know if I wanted to talk to everybody and have them open. So at this point, I guess that everybody is off the line. Is that correct?
Not as of yet. Did you want to start out with some questions?
Let's start out with some questions for people. You know, as we're getting started, I'm curious about whether people have come across certain students that they would think of as distracting in class. I'm hearing some giggles, which I'm imagining is yes. But can you explain a little bit about what kind of students you would categorize as distracting in your class? Anybody can start.
Hello.
Nobody has distracting students?
Yes, I do. Mr. Robin, I'm Pete Andrews. I'm with Advanced World Martial Arts. I'm Kernersville, North Carolina.
Well, hello there.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I do have a few distracting students, and there's, you know, of course, with the day of ADHD and all of that stuff going on, you can tell that there are some that they're diagnosed with that, but that's not really the case with them, and they're easy to really get under control. But then you do have some who really need to be on medication, and it's really not their fault that they're unable to control themselves. But at the same time, you've got to run a class, and you've got to control a class, and so you want to do it in a way that you don't demean the child and cause others to think badly of him or anything like that. How do you handle a situation like that?
Oh, well, that's a terrific question. You know, you're correct. There are a lot of reasons why why students are going to have problems. And some of those students may exactly have what you were saying. They may have ADHD, and they may have a chemical imbalance that doesn't allow them to really pay very close attention. Other students may have problems because they're not able to sleep well. Because they have really poor nutrition, they're watching too much television. You know, there's a lot of reasons why this could be happening. And what I'm going to do when I wind up going through the call would be I'm going to tell you a little bit about how you can kind of make an arrangement with a child that's a little bit more private on how you're together going to cope with this issue. Because usually children who are having ADHD problems or focusing problems do know that they're doing it. If it's something that's not able to be easily controlled by themselves or they need reminders, you don't want to demean them, you're right, but there are ways that you can kind of go about having a relationship with them that both you and that child know what it means when you hold up a certain sign, where other children may not be as, you know, in on the secret. And that will help you. And I'll go through that procedure with you. And I appreciate the question so that I can direct my call in the way that you best find it. So I will write that down as one of the things that you would like to know. Okay, what other things do people have questions on that they would like me to address today?
Dr. Robin, this is Sung Lim, King Tiger Martial Arts in Vancouver, Washington.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Can you give me your name one more time?
Sung Lim.
Okay.
Sung Lim. I'm a traditional Korean master that has developed his Taekwondo program here in Vancouver. My biggest interest in attending this conference, this is my first teleconference.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm attending it is because when I was looking at the note that was included in my mailer this month, I saw that you're identifying children differently. You know, we can all recognize those kids that have attention deficit disabilities, but, you know, the children that are shy, the children that are in constant need of telling you a story about their day or attention-seeking, but a lot of that's kind of accepted in our classrooms, but being able to identify that is also a source of disruption, and then being able to address those different kinds of not normally identified disruptive behaviors, I thought was going to be very interesting today. So
mm-hmm.
to get into that line of thinking, I'd really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So that's really going into a little bit more about monopolizers and withdrawn students.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will absolutely go over that. Okay. anybody else have a specific type of distracting student or have specific questions that they'd like me to address today? Okay. Well, we're going to be opening the lines at different times, so I don't want you to think that if you didn't get your question in now that you won't get it in later. I'm not really hearing much of this, you know, background noise, so unless that happens, we really don't need to take it out of this mode. So let me get started. You know, we're in, at this point, we're in back to school season. You know, we're right in the beginning of that. And we are all expecting a large number of new students to come through our doors typically when back to school season happens. And no new student is the same. You know, we have our stellar students who are always a pleasure to work with. They do their homework. They're kind to others. We have a great sense of leadership with these children. They're absolutely wonderful. And we also have our average students and our below average students. And interestingly, those who start with us can start as a below average student or a frustrating student or distracting student, tough to work with, and then they may blossom into a stellar student. And that's just one little cautionary thing that I want to say before we launch into all this information about distracting students. We want to make sure that we are very, very careful about placing permanent labels on the children. Okay? They might be permanent labels that we give ourselves, and we don't actually say them out loud. We think to ourselves, oh, no, there comes Josh. He is such a frustration, such a thorn in my side. He's such a pain. I can't deal with this child. He moves around in class. He doesn't pay attention. Those are labels that you're putting in your own mind already, and that is even before that child steps onto your floor. So you want to be very careful about what you're telling yourself about that child and try your best to give that child a fresh start every time they walk through the door. You also want to be careful of labeling a child or having the class label a child. Oh, there's Josh. Oh, Josh, he always is joking around. You know, that also sets that child up for that expectation. Children love to fulfill expectations. So if they have an expectation, their parent has an expectation, my child doesn't pay attention. This is my child, Josh. He has trouble focusing. He does not pay attention. Guess what that child will do? Okay? There's going to be a very important part of this this teleseminar today, which is making sure that you set up your expectations for that child to succeed. And it can be very difficult, and it can be very frustrating as teachers and also as parents to avoid doing that. You also want to be very careful about labeling a child in comparison to other children. Oh, here's Josh. You know, his big brother is such a terrific student, but Josh, he has trouble paying attention. Well, that, again, sets that child up for failure. That child will never be able to be better than his brother. No, he won't, because he has an expectation that he is the distracting one, that he is the unfocused one. And he will live up to that expectation. So you want to make sure that you are not placing any permanent labels on the child yourself. You're not letting other people place any permanent labels on a child, like a parent, like another student, like a big brother, a little sister, whomever it is. You want to get rid of those labels. And those of you who are using a character development program, whether it's ours, the Powerful Words character development program, or perhaps you're using another one, you know, that should be something that is outright said and expected in every character development program for martial arts. Okay? Of course, you know, if you have labels that are, you know, very good labels, like, oh, this child's a wonderful student, this child is a stellar student, this child pays great attention, the child will live up to that. And you may want to try that out for yourself. Take a student that is frustrating and challenging and give them a positive label and see if they live up to it. It should be very interesting for you. So, we've just a little bit discussed that you all have distracting students in our class. You know, some of them monopolize our time, you know, some don't pay attention, some withdraw into the background, some are stubborn and they refuse to do what we ask them to do. We all have students like this. And as teachers, we're not always prepared to deal with the different types of students. We're prepared to deal with basically the average student and anybody who's above average considerably. Well, they can be a challenge at times, too, but they are typically a gift. And those who are below average can sometimes be a thorn in our side, and we need to learn to be able to broaden our definition of what a good student is that comes to our school. Students can really frustrate us the most when they don't pay attention, when they distract other people, especially if we know as teachers that they are the type of student that if they just applied themselves, they would be among the best. And I'm sure that all of us could sit here and think about one, two, three students that they said, oh, if they just focus, they have incredible raw talent. I know my husband says that all the time about certain students. You know, they have the best raw talent that he's ever seen, more than he says he has in his own little pinky, and they don't apply themselves, so then, you know, they're not living up to the potential that they really could. You know, that can be of the most frustrating. But, you know, to be clear, a distracting student prevents other students from learning, typically. Or they might distract the teacher, and the teacher is unable to teach. They make distracting noises. They may not be able to keep their feet from moving. I say they have ants in their pants. Some do it for attention. Like we said, some have a chemical imbalance that's completely legitimate. And some, like I said, may have slept poorly the night before. Some drink lots of soda, eat sugary foods, don't take vitamins. I mean, the list go on and on and on. And we need to make it a point to get to the bottom of it, because only with the answer to the question, what is going on, will we be able to teach that child in the best way. You know, we can't simply, you know, let it go, because we need to run a fair and safe and successful martial arts academy. So, you know, what do we do? Some people may say, well, if you ignore the child, then they will correct their behavior on their own and it'll just go away. This is my least favorite idea, because as a child development specialist, that doesn't really jive well. No lesson is really taught there. Because if a child is reaching out for your attention and you're simply ignoring the child, they typically will get more and more focused on getting your attention rather than on the class. So that's typically not the best thing to do, okay? You know, we say it to the children, like our daughters, our sons, oh, just ignore them, they'll stop. They don't really stop. I mean, we know that. We say it to kids who have bullying problems, just ignore them, they'll stop. They really don't stop. We need to find some other options to deal with this rather than just saying ignore it and go, it will go away. You know, the wheel that gets the squeaks, that's the one that gets the grease. You know, that wheel that squeaks the loudest. And sometimes that grease comes in the form of reverence, you know, meaning that other students will follow that squeaky wheel, and then you have a really bad problem on your hands. So ignore it and go, it'll go away, probably doesn't work, may get worse, and then you've got other students that are saying, well, the teacher's not doing anything about that student, so, and they're looking like they're having a lot of fun, so let's just follow that student. Then you've got a bunch of kids that are distracting, and it can get really, really bad when you're outnumbered. So if you want to do something now, and just for reference, you know, it will take practice to get this down. But after all, training floor management, just like any other part of running a personal development center, is a skill that needs to be practiced in order to be mastered. So as far as working with distracting students, there are some things you can do. And interestingly, many of our Powerful Words clients have used this exact procedure and have had great success. So, incidentally, because of time, we won't be going into incredible detail on each one of these. We just don't have the time to do it in full, you know, in full detail. This is something that I could do maybe in a day. But for those of you who are interested, you probably would want to go to our website, which is powerfulwordsonline.com. And I have a full audio series that addresses this issue, as well as why children quit and what you can do about it, and how to transform your school into a personal development center. It's going to go into a lot more detail about dealing with distracting students. And all Member Solutions members are you're getting a really large discount on that. So we can go over that at the end of the call, but I just wanted to let you guys know that as well. So here's a quick overview of what to do. First, you want to really take the time to find out the problem. Okay, don't make any assumptions like, oh, this child may have ADHD, or I bet you this child's eating really horrible food. You want to really talk to the parent about the child's challenges with paying attention. And when you speak with a parent, sometimes people get very intimidated by this, you know, saying, well, what do I say? Well, you know, when you approach a parent, you're approaching them out of care and out of concern for a child. And you might say to them, you know, Josh is a student who I think has incredible talent. I think that he has incredible potential. However, I'm finding that he is having some trouble paying attention in class, and I just would like to talk to you a little bit and find out maybe together what we can do to best suit Josh today. You know, and ask questions. Okay, don't be accusatory. You know, I bet you that child's eating too much sugar. No, no, no. We want to say, you know, has there been an ongoing problem with his focus? Has anything new happened lately? One child was having a lot of problems in our school because his father left for the war. Well, you know, situations will change how a child deals with class or anything else that they do on a daily basis. So, you know, there's some things that are really hard to deal with, and we want to help them. You know, what is the child's diet? You know, I dealt with a child who only ate macaroni and cheese every day, macaroni and cheese, macaroni and cheese. And, you know, if you're not getting your nutrients, your body will respond. Some children have trouble sleeping. Some have horrible television habits. You know, and when you're watching a lot of television, it can actually really change your brain. Some of you may have already heard me say this before, but I'll just repeat it for those who are new. I remember speaking with a parent who was really, you know, she was really at her wit's end because her child was having so much trouble paying attention. Looked really like a classic ADHD type of a child, but there really was more to what was going on there. After digging around a little bit with that parent, we realized that that child was watching maybe 6 hours of TV a day and more than that on the weekend. So let's say about 50 hours of TV per week. And while you might think to yourself, you know, as just a, you know, as a martial arts instructor, we might say, oh, well, that child has a lot of energy then. You know, they're sitting there, they're being lethargic, they're just watching TV, they're passively doing an activity when they should be out running and that kind of thing. And that is true. There is some kind of energy type things that are going on there. But there's more than that because TV and video games can really change the structure of your brain. Remember, a child's brain is still forming. So when a child is watching television these days, it's going to be very different than the way we were watching television when we were younger. Now, let's take for an instance, just so you know what I'm talking about, let's take for instance Bugs Bunny. Okay? When we were younger, some of us were watching Bugs Bunny like a cartoon, or think of another cartoon that you may have watched in your past. And it was very slow moving. Okay? You watched each frame. And, you know, everything was happening kind of on a regular pace. Okay, these days, if you think of a cartoon that children are watching now or video games that children are doing now, they're very, very fast. The frames go right in succession very, very quickly. There's explosions. There's things you're watching. In fact, when I watch them myself, I need to close my eyes sometimes because they're so overwhelming. Okay, children these days who watch a lot of TV, their brain has changed to accommodate these very fast frames. Now they go into your class. And what is the pace of your class? Not fast moving like what they're seeing on TV now. Not fast moving like what they're seeing in the videos, but rather frame by frame, slow, Bugs Bunny kind of type slow frame. And it's hard for them to process something so slowly now. Okay? Well, we can't speed up to the point of being wham bam and crazy, but those children need practice dealing with slow moving things now. So TV can really, really make a difference in distracting in students who are going to be distracting in class. Watching a lot of TV can be very, very scary. Like I said, you know, they're just asking questions at this point. You know, have there been any recent changes at their home that have been impacting a child's ability to pay attention? For those of you who have heard me speak at different conferences or have listened to some of my audios or maybe have been on some Powerful Words monthly teleconferences, you know that I really stress the importance of asking questions. So people often make assumptions that wind up not being true, and asking questions can uncover problems, and uncovering the problem can lead to solutions. It also does something else. It creates a relationship with a parent where there may not have been one. You're now a partner in success rather than somebody else coming to them and telling them their child's not good enough, not smart enough, not focused enough. Okay? You're part of the solution. The next thing you want to do after you've figured out what the problem is have a way for the child to check himself in class, and that's just something that I use as a term to mean getting them from what they're doing to checking themselves and saying, wait a second, I'm not doing the right thing, I need to do something else right now, okay? Have a way, that sort of anchor in the classroom that could help a child deal with focusing on different tasks. So I use the term check yourself, and that could be connected with a specific position that the child can resort to, like some of you might say, check yourself, and that child goes into a horse stance or an attention stance or a guard stance or sitting with their legs crossed. It could be anything, okay? But check yourself can help the child refocus. It's a quick thing that you can say that will help that child go into whatever you've already previously selected for that child. Okay, Josh, you know, you might say to them before class, you know, sometimes you have trouble paying attention. That's okay. You know, sometimes you're really great on and totally on task. You know, if you find yourself getting a little unfocused today, I'm going to say, check yourself. And what I want you to do, hey, listen carefully, what I want you to do is when I say check yourself, I want you to immediately sit down with your legs crossed and your hands on your knees. Okay? Or when I say check yourself, I want you to immediately go into attention stance or guard stance. And really, really focus, okay? And then I will let you know when I want you to come out of it. If I say check yourself a couple of seconds later or a minute later, I'm going to say, okay, let's rejoin class. Okay, in that case, that child can collect themselves, refocus, and move on. And you'll see that it gets less and less obvious and more infrequent as time goes on. And you can give the child the steps. If I do this once, this is what I'm going to do. You know, if you get unfocused, first I'm going to say check yourself. You know, second, if you do it again, I'm going to have you do it for a little bit longer. And then third, if you do it again, I'm going to have you sit, you know, in the corner. You give them the steps that are going to happen because the child needs to know what the boundaries are. Most children who are distracting are checking your boundaries. How many things can they get through without you saying something? How far can they push the envelope before you say something? Who's in charge of your classroom? That child wants to be in charge many, many times, okay? They want to be the focus. You're the focus, but they sometimes want to be the focus. So if in that case that is their desire, you want to make sure you nip it in the bud right away, okay? Give them something constructive to do. Make sure that they know that you're setting the rules, and then you can move forward. And finally, one last part of that sort of correction phase. At the end of class, and this is so important, and I'm going to stress it, so important, you want to make sure that you privately praise that child, okay? I call it a praise chat. hey, Josh, oh, I know paying attention is really difficult for you today, but I really thought you did a great job checking yourself during class so that you didn't have to sit out. I'm really, really proud of you. Now, I think you can do better, even better next time. So I want you to try to do it without me needing to even tell you check yourself. I want you to be able to refocus just with a quick glance. And then we're going to try that, and I know you can do it because you are an incredible student. You have so much talent, and you are the type of student that I know can focus. I know you can do it. Okay, remember, positive labels. The child may have been distracting that day, but over time it can get better and better and better. And only can it get better and better and better if that child feels like they're making some influence in the class, influence on you, that you have noticed them, that you are proud of them, that they can do something that breathes positive attention. Okay, this is really, really important. You may give them a high five. It's often really helpful to use some of the character words you're teaching in class in relation to that child that month. For example, if the powerful word of the month is respect, you might say, you know, you really showed respect to the other children in class today. And when you refocused yourself and disciplined yourself to keep working, that really shows powerful character. And I'm proud of you. Great job. Okay? Next month, the word of the month is courage for the Powerful Words members. So, in that case, I would talk about that. Say, Josh, when you needed to check yourself, but then I invited you back, it took courage for you to come back into class. And knowing that, you had a little bit of trouble before, but you came back in. And I want you to know I appreciate that. It takes courage. And when you show courage and you take those healthy risks, that is when you improve your character every single time. Good for you. Okay? I know I spent a little time on that, but it's really, really important because many, many times teachers forget that little part. And then by the same token, I would do the same thing prior to class. And this doesn't have to happen all the time. But before class, I might say, hey, Josh, we're going to have a great class today, right? We're going to remember what we talked about last time? Terrific. I know you can do it. You're going to be great today. Okay? One of our client schools in New York had asked me about how to cope with distracting or lethargic students in class, and I gave him this exact technique that I told you about just now, and he employed it. And all four of the students that he was having trouble with had a complete turnaround. This works, and it allows children to rise to the occasion. So that's really important. Before I go into moving into sort of monopolizing students, I just want to open the call really briefly to see if anybody had any questions about what I just said. Anybody have any questions? Okay. Let's move on then. There are other students that don't really fall into the distracting category in the sense of the word that they're not moving around and have ants in their pants and that kind of thing. But they do monopolize our time. They want to keep talking all the time. And if you ask the question, they'll give you a 5-minute answer. And it's hard to get in a word edgewise. You might find that these students are bossing other students around. They might ask so many questions that you really don't have a chance to get through your lesson. Or they might be asking a lot of questions so that other students don't get a chance. And these are what I call monopolizing students. And they have really learned at an early age a very important lesson, that teachers like people who participate. And there needs to be a balance that's struck, and sometimes children don't know when to stop because they feel like, oh, well, if the teacher knows that I'm really excited about class, they'll be really excited about me. So there's a balance that needs to be struck. And students who monopolize the group can often overpower a class, and, they kind of stick out like a sore thumb. Other students who may be more average and may not be as outspoken will be more likely to retreat when monopolizing students take their power. And students who are really withdrawn would not even have a chance to participate. So we do need to be vigilant about this. Sometimes we make our own monopolizers. Again, that's that whole labeling idea. Sometimes we pick on the same student over and over again because they have the right answers or because we really like them. That's something to be careful about. And we also sometimes have students that, we expect them to monopolize the conversation, and, of course, they rise to the occasion at that point, too. So initially, you just want to establish some rules. If you're finding that you're having monopolizers in class, even one, you do want to make sure that you establish some rules that allow the entire class to follow the same rules, which, you know, might be everybody needs to have a turn. Once you've asked one question in class, you need to wait until everybody else gets a turn to ask the question before it comes back to you again. Whatever you want your rules to be so that it's helpful for you. You may even have, if you have like a storm team or one of your teenagers, that they could help to brainstorm with your classes so that the rules are coming from the classes themselves instead of from you. That's a really good idea. Many of you have heard me speak before. I say, if you say it, it can be questioned. If the children say it, it's the gospel truth. Okay, so if you can let them say it, that's going to be the best thing possible. So maybe September is a really good time for this since there's a lot of new students. You might say to them, when we have our little mat chest, we want to make sure everything's fair for everybody. So what would be a really good rule for our class to make sure that everything's fair? Okay, they might raise their hand and say everybody should have a turn. Tell me a little more about that. What if somebody has a lot of answers? Well, they really should wait until the rest of everybody has a chance and let them say it, and you become more of a facilitator in the conversation, or that teenager becomes a more facilitator in that conversation. Okay? So if you can do that, then you're laying the groundwork for a more fair class. You want to put those rules in simple language, so don't get, real over the top with them. And you want to use familiar words from your character education program. Again, if you're using powerful words, then, you're going to be using the words that you've already brought up. Maybe this month's charity, last month's attitude, next month's courage, whatever it is. You want to put that into your rules about using those, use respect, use fairness, open-mindedness, whatever the words are that you're using. Once the leaders know the rules, they also can be ones that help your classes run more smoothly. And once the other kids know the rules, they might even call somebody out at it. Hey, Josh, you already had a turn. Remember, the rule number 3 says everybody needs to have a turn. So now you've got some more advocates in class. You also want to brainstorm some, what is disruptive behavior, what is frustrating behavior with your class so that they, again, can be able to address it with the rules. And you can designate some people in the class, whether they're, your more advanced students or your leaders, to help the class run more smoothly. If you're finding that one child is going, keeps asking questions, you want somebody else besides yourself that needs to remind them all the time about this. So you can have some other people in your class that can help you with that. And make sure that you set the precedent in advance that there's really only a set amount of time for class. And you want all of the children to know that you love their participation, but there's a time and place for conversations, stories, questions. I don't know what that was. And you want to make sure that all of the children know when those times are to ask questions. It means that any of the, it doesn't mean that other questions aren't important, but if you want to be fair to everybody, we need to make sure that we get through the lesson, everyone gets a chance to participate. Another thing is if you're finding a single student who keeps talking, you want to be able to redirect, okay? So this might be a very useful tool for you that you know, you can say, Josh, that was a really interesting point. I think that's a great thinking, and you may need to jump in to do this because many children, if they want to get a point across, string many, many sentences in a row where there's no breath. So you might need to just jump on in. You know, that's a really interesting point. Great thinking. Now let's see what other people think. Okay, so you're redirecting to the rest of the class and making sure that other students have a time to check to jump in if they have something to say. Okay, because, you know, if you have a child who's going to keep talking and talking and talking, then the class will run out before you have a chance to do that. And many children don't have the social skills yet of knowing exactly how to jump in, so you need to do it for them. You can also provide some extra time before or after class for questions for those children, and you can have them write them down if they feel like, you know, you have more and more questions from the same particular child. And then also be aware that when you ask a question, that the same children over and over again will raise their hand. So you can say, Josh, you've answered a question already today, and I so appreciate it. We may have more time for you to answer this after, but I need to go to somebody else first. So nobody else raised their hand at that time, so you might just pick. So, Katie, I'd love to hear from you today. Okay, so that people know that even if they don't answer their question, that you really want to hear from them, and that it's not always about the person who raised their hand and says, ooh, 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 pick me. Don't ever pick somebody who does that. You're reinforcing horrible behavior in that case. Okay? If you need a tangible reminder for a younger time, a younger child, you might want to use stickers, you know, that they've already asked a question or they already told a story. So you might want to just put a sticker on their finger or their hand that says, you know, you've already talked. You might have a check mark on a board in front of your class, something like that. That can help as well. So, you know, these are some of the ways that you can deal with these kinds of problems. Sometimes students ask questions that would cause the instructor to get really, really off track, and you need to be careful about that. I remember when I was in second grade, I had this nurse. She was the health teacher in class, and she would come in, and one of the students inevitably would ask about her cat because we never wanted to talk about health for some reason, or I think we just really wanted to get that teacher off track. We thought it was funny, so we would ask about her cat, and for the rest of the time, she would talk about the cat. So you do want to be really careful about that. If somebody says to you, "Do you know what? My daddy is taking me to McDonald's today," you might say, well, that's really interesting, but remember, we're talking about respect right now, so let's answer that question, okay? All right, so you can always redirect and not without making somebody feel bad. And finally, you know, this is one of the most important things you can do. Again, you want to be able to have a discussion with students after class and let them know, you know, I know that you've been practicing at home, you're doing such a great job, I really liked it today that you were participating so much, but I want you to know some of the kids, they're not able to give as many answers as you because, you know, you always have really, really terrific answers, but don't you think we should give some other people, a little bit of time to answer some questions also? I'm sure that they would agree. Sometimes kids just need you to notice things for them and help them to process what's going on in class, and that's really a learning moment, okay? It's not only what we do when we're in front of the class, but also when we're in the back room or when we're just at the side of the mat. That can be really good teaching moments for all of us. Anybody else have any questions before we continue? Okay. Somebody have a question? Okay. As we talked about when we first got on, we were also talking about how there are some withdrawn students, and these can be particularly frustrating, not because they distract us necessarily in class, but because we know that they have the potential to be absolutely terrific. And sometimes when they're not noticed will only help it to perpetuate the problem, which is that they're just not going to continue. They're not going to be part of the conversation. They're not going to be part of class. They're just doing it in the background. And we want to help those students realize that they have the potential for a lot more. You want to make eye contact with those students who you find to be inattentive or withdrawn. But you do not want to bore holes in them. Okay? Don't stare at them and wait for them to be staring back. That can be extremely disconcerting for a shy student. But you do want to be able to make contact with that child, make eye contact with that child so that they know that you're interested in them. You want to let them know in a nonverbal way that you notice them and that they're important to the class, that you would like to hear from them. And it's important for these people to get comfortable with eye contact, and it may take some time. You might find when you look at them that they look away, but it's something to practice. It's a skill. Okay? And you may be the very first person who actually helps them to exercise that skill. So don't take it for granted. And take notice of how your eye contact works. You know, many people tend to make more eye contact with students who are outgoing. Do you do that? If you do that, you want to make sure you make a few adjustments, because those other inattentive students or shy students or withdrawn students, they still want the attention, but they might need it in a little bit of a different way. You can stand near a withdrawn student or a shy student, and you can spend some little bit of private time with them. A lot of shy students, withdrawn students, are often afraid that they're going to make a mistake in front of everybody. They get a little nervous about sort of being a spectacle. That can be extremely disconcerting for them. So in that case, you want to make sure that you maybe do a little private thing with them. You know, if you have people paired up in twos, you want to make sure that they are participating in a way, these shy students are participating in a way that is very helpful to them. You might go over to them and say, you're doing a really good job. Here, just make this quick adjustment. Okay. Is anybody... does anybody have any questions yet? I want to make sure that you're at least there. Is everybody there?
I'm here.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Otherwise, you begin your thinking you're talking to yourself, and,
right.
And that becomes very scary. Okay. Thank you for answering. Okay.
You're welcome.
do you have any other questions before we continue, or are you understanding all the things that I'm saying?
Actually, we run a mini ninja program at our school. This is Chuck Crone from Crone's Taekwondo School in Pennsylvania. And a lot of stuff that you're talking about, we do a lot of.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that.
I'm happy to hear that I'm on track with what you're talking about.
Good. Absolutely. Well, if you have any questions specifically about any specific children or anything like that, I'm happy to answer those, and hopefully you'll also get some additional ideas.
You gave me a couple of ideas for a couple of students that we have issues with.
Oh, good. I'm thrilled. No. Which ones are particularly helpful so far?
Well, we do try to approach the kids, the parents, about the children when they're getting a little active, out of control, and talk to them about what their diet's like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a rule here, no soda.
Mm-hmm.
Before, during, or after class, and I leave that as an open, as in, you know, never.
Yeah, it's a good way of saying never.
Yeah, and this one child we have in the Little Ninja, he just is moving into Little Ninjas, which starts at 5 years old, the 3 and 4 mini. He is out of control, and he was in the last class, and I realized I never talked to the parents about, does he drink soda? Does he drink it before? What's his diet like, and how is he sleeping? What are his sleeping habits?
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned about the TV. I've thought about it in other ways, but not in the way that you explained it, where when I was a kid, I watched Bugs Bunny, and it is frame by frame slower, and now the cartoons are multi things going on at one time.
It's overwhelming.
Yes. So, you know, that's another thing, too, I'm going to bring up with her is finding out what kind of television time he has. So, you know, that gives me a little bit of a chance to maybe figure him out where the problem really is.
Yes, I think that's one of the most important things you can do, and just sort of become more of a coach in that case, so that you're not making decisions based on false accusations.
Right.
It's really important to do. Too many people make assumptions and then try to solve a problem that's not actually the problem.
Right. And then it becomes a problem.
And then it becomes a problem. Yeah. And I actually worked with one of the leading brain specialists at Tufts University who didn't even have a TV in her house because of this reason. She was a brain specialist and knew that that's what TV does to a child's brain. It has to. You have to accommodate for the different ways that we're presenting information to children. So it's not that strange to me that many more children are now having trouble concentrating in school.
Right.
So
I did another step. I really teased my kids. I had the house completely wired for cable, but they didn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
So they read instead of watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
But it was
mm-hmm.
there.
Right.
But, okay.
Good.
Thank
my pleasure. I'm glad to be helpful. Okay, I'm just going to continue a little bit here. To make sure that there's no surprises, you want to let children know in advance that everybody is going to be called on when they're in class. Okay, that could be a good rule for people if you're interested in those withdrawn students participating in class. Okay, so you can have a rule, everybody's going to be participating. Okay, if you have children who just crawl under a desk before they answer a question, you could make little allowances for them in the very beginning, but over time, try to draw them out a little bit more. What I do, and I've done with children who are extremely withdrawn, is I actually tell them the question I'm going to ask them in advance. And this helps them prepare, because remember, withdrawn, shy students often are not answering questions because they're afraid they're going to be wrong, but they hate to be put on the spot. So you might say, and this is, I've done this, maybe 2 weeks ago I did this with a child, said, I'm going to be asking you today about one thing that made you smile in class. That's the question I'm going to ask you. Now, I knew it wasn't going to be a challenging question. I didn't want to ask her a challenging question. I wanted to ask her something that I knew she would know, something that made her smile in class. And I saw several times her smiling in class, and I actually said to her, ooh, look, you're smiling. Ooh, look, you're smiling. That can be very helpful to a child because now they're actually practicing the skill. Then over time, they'll feel more comfortable asking questions and getting involved with class. And this is just one more thing that you can do to help them. Okay? Now, when you have children who are withdrawn, you're going to have to just be very, very patient and know that sometimes this, each part of this takes a little bit of time. So don't feel like you need to, make a change and it's going to be something that you all of a sudden magically just, woohoo, no problem, has no problem adjusting to. So just know that. You also might want to spotlight a child who's withdrawn so that they get positive attention. Now, you have to kind of really think about this. Is this child ready for other people to be looking at her or him? When the time is right, and you'll know because the child will have started to warm up, and you may have done this little question and answer thing with her or him, and now you're able to tell them, okay, what about I want to tell people that you're doing really, really good push-ups. I'm seeing that you're doing really good push-ups and a lot of other people aren't doing them well. Would you mind if I called on you today? And just so that you could show a push-up. And now they're prepared, and now you're doing it. Over time, you won't need to set them up as much. Okay? And one last thing, for partner work, sometimes we think to ourselves we should pair a shy student up with a really outgoing student. That doesn't always work extremely well. You don't want a child who's really shy working with a really boisterous person because it can be a little overwhelming for them. But you do want to pair a shy student up with somebody who might be more average as far as their ability to participate in class, okay? Maybe slightly more outgoing, maybe a little bit more outgoing than the average student, but not the most outgoing, okay? That's just something that, that you want to be careful about. And then finally, you want to make sure that in the work that you're doing, in your math chat, you are incorporating assistance for these children. So, for example, I said next month, the powerful word of the month is courage, okay? So, wow, what an incredible opportunity to be working on this kind of issue with these children who are withdrawn. The following month for powerful words is discipline. What a great time to be working on issues of distracting behavior with those students, okay? You want to take the words that you're using and really, really use them to the maximum benefit. You're sending letters home to the parents about the word of the month, letting them know, you know, this is a great opportunity. This is what we're going to be talking about. This is what courage means. This is how we're going to be using it. This is what discipline means. This is how we're going to be using it. Encouraging parents to use it as well as at home, you know, really laying it out for them exactly what you're going to be going over. The same token, you know, this might be the time where you're going to use a teacher connection letter. Every September, I have the powerful words. People send out a letter to their teachers that says, you know, this is what powerful words is all about. This is what our school is all about. We incorporate all this character development into our schools because your students are our students. We have the same students. So you might say to those teachers, you know, this is, we really want to work on courage with this student. And as you know, this is what courage means. And if you've seen this child using courage in any way, this is how I, you know, I would love for you to let me know about it. Here's something to fill out, and you can give them all the information on how to do that. And then in your math chat, you're also talking about it. Courage is trying new things. Courage is this. Courage is that. And you're helping them on a day-to-day basis walk through that word. With discipline, you're walking through that word. It's developmentally appropriate for the youngest kids. You've got your math chats for your older kids. You've got your projects for all three, you know, your youngest kids, your middle kids, your teens. You've got your math chats for adults. You've got all of those things going on so that everybody's talking about it. Parents are talking about it. The adults are talking about it. Teens, kids. And when everybody's talking about it, you're submerging those children in that word of the month, whether it's courage and you're working on that with the withdrawn students, whether it's discipline, you're working on that with your, you know, distracting students, kids that have ADHD. These are really important things that you can do that address the entire class but also help the other students come forward and help themselves. Does anybody have any questions? We have a few minutes left in class. Anybody have any questions about anything I said today, anything that I haven't said yet?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Sensei Schneider in New York, Family Martial Arts Center.
Very nice to meet you.
Good meeting you. I have some students that crave attention, and it doesn't matter what kind. Negative, positive, from other students, it doesn't matter to them. As long as they get some attention. Do you have any good ways of dealing with them? And, of course, I try the, you know, I reward them for the slightest good behavior to lead them in the right direction. But this year particularly, I have some students that no matter what, as long as they get attention.
What do you do with those children when they are getting misbehaving? What do you do?
Well, one... The first step is I make them aware that they're doing it because sometimes the attention span on average has gone drastically to a shorter period in general in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they're not necessarily aware that they're doing it. So first I call their attention to, look, you know, you know that everybody else is, you know, waiting right now and you're not doing that. Okay. Then if they are aware and they just don't care, then when I see him doing something well, I praise him for that with a very short, quick little, you know, great, you're standing there, you know, I saw you waiting your turn, that was great, you know, just a little quick thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in front of the whole class, maybe I'm a little bit closer to them, so that's the students close to them hear it, but it's specifically directed at them. But some just constantly want attention. And then my last resort is I separate them from other students physically. You know, they're standing a little bit further away from the next students because the same students also have a tendency to just touch other students, grab them, do stuff that is inappropriate all the time. So until the last step for me then is to physically separate them.
So, okay. You've got boundary testers, that's for sure. That's your, and it sounds to me like some of these students need some stricter boundaries than even you're providing at this point. I think at this point, if you're the same students over and over again, which it sounds like they are,
mm-hmm.
is that correct?
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
So, we all need to be on the same page. Okay, so, Josh, in the last couple of classes, I've had to repeatedly talk to you. Today, if you do, if you make, you know, if you grab anybody, if you do X, Y, and Z, any of the things he's doing, there will be no, I will not be making you aware of it. I'm going to simply sit you out of class for a period of time, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Whatever mm-hmm. it is you decide. You need to be stronger with it because the last things haven't worked yet, okay? And you'll need to find out what, how far you need to go. 5 minutes, and not in a fun place, okay? They need to be somewhere that they're not going to be making eye contact with all their little friends or waving to their parents or anything like that, okay? You should do something extremely fun, really,
mm-hmm.
really fun when they are not able to participate because that will stink. Okay? There needs to be a lack of privileges that happens, and it's got to be pretty strong with these particular children that you're talking about. That doesn't mean that it has to be all the time with everybody, because some students, you can look at them funny, and they will stop what they're doing.
Right.
So, okay, so now, Josh, we've had a lot of issues with focusing lately. I've seen you do a really good job, and I've seen you, you know, have some trouble. Today, because we've had problems in the past, and I know I can have high expectations of you, the first time you do it, I'm going to have you sit out immediately. No questions asked. I'm going to have you sit over here, and you will not be able to participate. You sit for 5 minutes, and you're able to, you know, refocus yourself. I'll invite you back into class. If when you're sitting out, you're being distracting at all, you will continue to sit there for an additional 5 minutes. And there needs to be some kind of repercussion for their behavior. And it needs to be in a place that they're not getting any attention. If they're striving for attention, you need to make sure you're not giving it to them at that particular point. You've moved them away, and the only way that they're going to get positive attention is if they're included in class and they're doing the right thing in this
mm-hmm.
case. Okay? Okay, so you've got the before class, Josh. I know you can do an incredible job today. I know that you're going to get through class, and you're going to get through with flying colors. I'm not going to need to talk to you once. I know that you can do it. I know that you can do it. I saw last time, remember that last time you stood online, didn't touch anybody, you did such a good job. I was so proud of you. It was great. Okay. I want you to know that because I need to be fair to everyone and we need safety first, you know, and when we goof around, it's not being safe. So today, when you have one problem, I'm going to have to have you sit out. But I'm not expecting that that's going to happen. Of course, right, Josh? Right. Of course. I know. You know you can do it. Okay. So he does it. You sit him out immediately. Okay? Josh, you just sit there for 5 minutes. I don't want I want you to think about what you're doing, but I do not want you making any eye contact with people. No distracting behavior. If you do, you're going to sit there for another 5 minutes, and we're going to have a really good time in class today. Okay? It's going to keep going on like that. Invite him back. No grudges whatsoever. Okay, there's not a single grudge. You don't have any grudges. Josh, I'm going to invite you back in class. I know you can do it. Ready? Good. Great. Gets back into class. The end of class, you say to him, you know, after class, Josh, we had that one problem today. You know, how did you feel while you're sitting over there? Oh, not very good because you had to miss out on this, that, and the other thing. Well, understand, when you participate in class and you really focus, you have the best time. And that's what I expect of you. Next time, what do you think I should expect of you? I won't have a problem, sir. Good. And just go through that particular thing and see how he responds or she responds to that way of dealing with it. because once you establish what it is that this child, what is going to work for that child, then you're really on to something. If you keep doing the same behaviors over and over again, expecting them to have different results, it's not going to work for you, and it's also going to be really distracting for the rest of the class. How's that sound to you?
Sounds very good. Exactly. I'm kind of on that track.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to, reinforce it a little more, especially
mm-hmm.
with, putting them in an area where they cannot interact with the other children. I think that's very important. So basically, their only reward is to be bored for, 5 minutes is good.
Yeah, exactly. So, whatever it is. And in the rest of the class, you're praising the rest of the class. Oh, you guys are doing such a good job. You're focusing so well. I'm really proud of you. When you focus, we can all have a good time. Okay? So the rest of the class is also on board with this. And, and then that other child is not getting that praise or that attention that he's striving for. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
This is Michael Emanuel, Selfless America.
Hi, Mike.
I've got my child in my after-school program.
Mm-hmm.
And since he was raised here, it's difficult to keep him in line with the other kids. Do you have any suggestions?
Age of the child?
He's six.
6 years old. And you said he was raised there, meaning he's been at your class forever?
Yeah, well, he taught classes when he was a baby. We'd hold him, and he pretty much runs around here during the day. And he started school this year, so now he's in our after-school program. So he kind of feels like it's his home
turf.
Away from home.
And 6 years old, he should have an understanding of what's going on. Do you find yourself being able to discipline him in the same way that you're disciplining the other children?
I seem to be harder on him.
Okay. And is he? How is he responding to your methods of disciplining him?
Most of the time, pretty well. Yesterday, it didn't work out too well.
What exactly was the situation yesterday?
We have about 45 kids, and he came in, and he's wanting to eat his snacks and do things he wanted to do and trying to talk to a parent, and he came up, and I wasn't listening to him, so he kicked me.
Ooh. Gotcha. And then what did you do?
Well, after I dealt with the parent, we took him to the back, talked to him, and then we went ahead and grounded him, so he had... he went home that day and sat at the table for 3 hours.
Okay, and then, and now you don't know if his behavior is any better yet.
Well, when I went home last night and talked to him, it seemed that, I'd sat down with him and talked to him that, that's not going to, you can't do that. A, I'm your father. B, I'm your master instructor. The other kids are not allowed to do that. You can't do that. And you're not supposed to be doing that, period.
Right.
And he seemed to be a lot more apologetic and,
yeah, I think your method of, removing him from the fun situation that he was in and having him sit at the table was a good, was a good idea. It may just have done more of the trick. Does he have the expectations of, if I do this, this will happen? Did he know, if I kick Daddy, this is what's going to happen?
He's done it before, but he thinks it's fun because we kind of play rough.
Oh, I see. So there's a little bit of a difference. I would say first, one of the first things you need to do with him is sit down with him and have a conversation where he and you come up with the rules of how to behave in class.
Yeah, that's what we did last night.
Okay, good.
So we'll see if it works today.
Okay, so they're in his words, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so he came up with the rules of exactly what, no kicking, this, that, and the other thing, and they were in his words. And you may want, when he comes in today, ask him to remind you of what the rules are and what the constructive thing would be to do instead. And reenact the type of situation that you had yesterday. You're sitting there, you're talking to whomever, pull anybody over. And tell him exactly what he needs to do
okay.
in that particular situation. Sometimes, again, that's where either teachers or parents fall short. They scold the child for doing the wrong behavior. They talk about maybe what the right behavior would be to do, but they don't actually have them role play the exact behavior that they need to do. So that could be really beneficial. So if he is standing there, what is it that you want him to do? You want him to wait? If he needs to, if there's something specific that he needs to say, excuse me, and whatever it is that he wanted to say. And okay, so he says, excuse me, Dad, I was wondering if I could eat my snacks over here. And you say, okay, remember, the rules of this is to do X, Y, and Z. So first we're going to do this, second we're going to do this, and third we're going to do this. You understand? Okay, terrific. And that would be a positive interchange. So whatever it is that you want for him to do, you want to role play it out with him so that he does it correctly. And then praise him for that. Make sure that he knows that he's doing the right thing and that you're proud of him. And now he has an expectation. He knows that you have the expectation and everybody's on board with the correct behavior. And it takes more time, but it really is worthwhile.
I'll do that when he gets off the bus.
Okay, good. Well, it looks like we've gone 10 minutes over.
Can I add something to that real quick?
Go ahead.
This is Master Crone again.
Hello.
Both my girls, one's 24 years old. I started teaching her when she was 13 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And by 12, she was one of my instructors.
Good.
And I had a problem with her with the same situation. I mean, she pretty basically slept at the school while we worked, my ex-wife and I. And one of the things that I found is having my black belts teach her and teach my other daughter really worked out great because it separated that father-daughter situation, although I still taught her, but not on a consistent basis because I expected more out of her than the other students, and I would get the feedback of, you're always picking on me, and, you know, things like that. So by having my black belts work with her and going over with my black belts the issues that I needed to be covered, and this is going beyond just the behavioral thing that he was asking about, but I saw that in the beginning, and I saw how it transpired, or how it went through the whole routine up until 14, 15 years old, and I see things that I did wrong, and I should have done differently, and I did do them too late. And that was having the black belts teach her. That way, she looked at them in a different way. It was, they weren't her parents, and they were higher ranked than she was. So she listened to them a little bit better than what she did with me sometimes. And at the same time, I would still teach her, like I was saying, but I would try to put some of that responsibility on the other black belt. So I would just say be careful that you don't, one, expect too much from your daughter more than the, or your son, more than what you expect out of the other students. Don't push them. Because of the fact that they look at, the way I see it, the kids will look at you as a dad. You're always making me clean my room, you do the dishes, do this, do that. Now at school you're making me do this. So
what you're bringing up is you know, the difference between some vertical relationships, meaning, you know, the sort of father-son type of relationships, and then you have more horizontal relationships, which are more peer-related.
Right.
You have, like, a black belt or, you know, a team that's working with your children. They have a little bit of the best of both worlds. They're kind of peers, but they're higher ranked, and they're also older. So, you know, they're the people that a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old would want to impress. We all want to impress our big sisters, big brothers, and those who we think are really cool. And fathers and moms don't get to be cool in the eyes of young children. So there is a real advantage to that. And it can be very effective to have other people that are on board to help, you know, your children and other children at school learn. And, in fact, the very reason why I have a strong leadership team and make sure that I have the children who have gone through the program and now our teams partially help to teach the classes, teach the character education component, do some of the introductory lessons and really be that person who can help to discipline children, but in a way that is more, it's less of a, in a parenting way and more in a, you know, this is what we do here. This is just what we do here.
And they're still cool in the minds of the younger kids, so they're going to be, they want to be like them.
Absolutely, and when one of the things I had mentioned when we were talking in this series today was, you know, making sure that the people who are involved in coming up with the rules for the after school program for your martial arts academy are your leadership team, are the cool kids, you know, that are in your school, because these younger kids are going to be much more apt to listen to other peers or peers that are higher ranked than them, older than them, than they are to adults that seem much farther removed. So, okay, now we've gone 15 minutes over, and I apologize for taking some more of your time today, but I also think that it was necessary. I wanted to make sure I answered a lot of your questions. If you wind up having more questions, you can always get in touch with us through powerfulwordsonline.com. And like I said, if you're interested in getting any of the audio series, like the dealing with distracting students, why children quit and what you can do about it, developing a personal development center, you can get that through powerfulwordsonline.com. And if you're interested in getting on board the character development program, Member Solutions people get a big discount from that. You can get that right through Member Solutions or through us, and we can sign you up for that. It's a good time in September to do that. We'd be happy to help you with that. There's also a lot of freebies. You can actually download a free month of Powerful Words right now if you want to by going to Powerful Words Online. So I hope everybody got a lot out of today, and I look forward to hearing from all of you. And I look forward to coming back and talking to you again. Thank you for coming, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Good. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.